So welcome everyone. Thank you for coming. And what I'd like to do this morning is for those of you, are there people here who are here for the first time? So there are a few people here. Oh, good. So we'll have a time for questions. So if there are any questions you have about what we do or haven't done or what this means or that means, we'll have time at the end to ask questions about the specific practices or else how to bring the teachings and the practices into our daily life. Before I get into the formal talk, I know yesterday there was a day of mindfulness, or a half day of mindfulness. How many people were there for that, or here? Or maybe how many people weren't? Oh, so a good number weren't. Good. So I know that the topic is the six paramitas, which are these fundamental aspects of the Buddhist path, and I believe yesterday the talk was on generosity. So I'm sure Andrew did a good job on giving the basics of this profound teaching. I just want to say a couple of things. I haven't really prepared, but we are in this 6 months kind of practice of the practice of selflessness, learning how to live selflessly. And many of the talks and the themes and the intensives and the retreats all tie into this theme of how to live a selfless life, which obviously is opposed to how to live a selfish life, or a self-centered life, or an egocentric life, which is actually the teachings and the practices that most of us have cultivated for most of our life, knowingly or unknowingly. So we are trying to learn a different way. And I think generosity, giving, is a key practice of selfless living. Because most of us do practice significant generosity throughout our life. But we are primarily generous to ourselves, if truth be told. We are very generous in making sure that we always have enough to eat and that we get the food we likes. We likes. I like that. We get the food that we like and enjoy. Many of us are very indulgent and very generous to ourselves in terms of food. We're very generous to ourselves in terms of clothes and how we look and dressing up self the way we like to look. We're very just generous to ourselves. We are very generous with our time, aren't we? We give a lot of time to ourselves to make sure that all our needs are met and all our pleasures are met, and we give a lot of our time, a lot of our energy, and really the overwhelming majority of our material resources are devoted to who? To me. And that's the truth. And but we also maybe have come a little bit out of that total self-centered generosity, where there may be a few others that we're generous to. And usually they're people who we might consider family or something, because we many of us, you see our family members as extensions of ourself. But oftentimes our generosity is based on how they're treating us. So if we don't like what they're doing, the way they're treating us, we may find we have decided we're not going to be so generous to them. So again, most of us practice our generosity primarily for ourselves. And that's just the truth. So we know how to do it, don't we? When we are primarily concerned with somebody and care about their well-being and very identify with their well-being, their happiness, their state of life, again, we're talking about we are for ourselves, then we find very naturally and spontaneously we are very moved to take care of my needs, right? So we know how to be generous. The practice of non-self is moving out of that is losing that overweening concern just for me, but by willing to establish this wondrous interconnection, oneness, non-separation, interconnection that we have with all beings. And as the as this narrowness of generosity begins to dissipate, we find that the practice of generosity, in a certain way, is even more meaningful when we learn to be generous to others. It's a strange thing. At this point, we get most of our kicks out of being generous when we're generous to ourselves. Right, we love, you know, we love to indulge ourselves and give ourselves all the good things that we know that we like, and take care of ourselves, you know, in all ways, and we think, and oftentimes that gives us a certain kind of happiness. But I would suggest that there is, interestingly enough, that mathematically, focusing all one's generosity on one person, you get very limited rewards. But when you focus your generosity on 5, 10, 15, 20, 100, 200, 300, can you see how the reward is increased? It's a strange thing. It doesn't seem, for most people who are lost in self-centeredness, that doesn't seem right? Because we think true happiness comes from meeting all my needs and getting all my goals and objectives taken care of, and expressing my generosity that way. It's hard for us to believe that actually, as it's said in the mindfulness training, the second mindfulness training, which is the mindfulness training of generosity, it says, I will share what my time, my material resources, my energy, with those who are in need. Everybody is in need, to one degree or another. So please understand that a generous heart, a giving heart, is a heart that has broken down the walls between self and other, and it is the expression of non-self in action. And just speaking a very personally, I think generosity is something that we learn. And we learn it best by going to generous places where it hurts. Now, when I say it hurts, I don't mean physical hurt. There's a different kind of pain that we have around generosity, because the opposite of generosity is what? Hold on. Everybody know that one? Hold on. Hold on to my stuff. Hold on to my time. Hold on to my energy. Got to be very careful with it, right? Don't want to give away too much of it. Got to keep it very close. Because somehow we think that somehow the energy of generosity, the energy of giving, is somehow a very, I don't know, it's like there's a very limited amount. It's a very limited amount, and I got to be really careful with it. Can't give enough away, or I'll just be what? Deflated or something. It's actually interesting, because I would say that the energy of non-self, the energy of generosity, which is the energy of love, is probably the most powerful energy there is. And it has no, you cannot run out of it. Don't worry. So in the practice of generosity, personally speaking, I think it's a very, one should be very experimental, right? And please take note that it is to be generous with things that you're not attached to is a funny kind of generosity. right? Because, I mean, when there's something that I really, if I have some object, something, right, and I really don't care about it that much, or I'm thinking of replacing it, or all right, well, I'll donate it to so and so, right? Now, that in a certain way, that is generous. We can certainly say because you're giving, but in truth, you're giving something that has no meaning or attachment to you. So it's kind of a yeah. But to me, I don't think we get much credit for that. I mean, we all do that, but I'm saying I would in the practice of generosity. I wouldn't give us high marks. We'd probably get a C on that one. You know, it's when I have something that I really like, right? That I'm really attached to, that really gives me happiness. For me to say, you know, maybe others can really enjoy this. Maybe this can bring happiness to others. Why should it just be for me? I want to give it to somebody else, right? Yeah. And there's a part of us, you know, there's that little uncomfortableness. There's that part that wants to hold on, and then that's the place of where practice gets interesting. Right? See, that's the place. You know, I always say to people, your practice should have an edge, and you should know where that edge is. And that's where you want to be practicing. Don't always practice in the safe places, in the known places. But, you know, where are you uncomfortable, right? So, you know, you practice loving kindness to people you like. See, to me, you don't get any credit for that. Because that's easy. Practicing loving kindness to people that you don't like or are hard to like. You know, or people that you've been in the past indifferent to. See, now we start getting some credit because it's taking us out of that place of comfort. It's where we get a little uncomfortable, where there's a part of us that goes, ooh, I don't want to do that. That's the good place to practice. So in generosity, we come right, you know, the closed hand, the hand that holds on, the hand that's attached, the hand that wants to hold on to things. And whether it's things or it's my energy, my time, right? All the things we say my to, right? You see, if I have some extra time and I say, well, I have some extra time, I'll go help this person, or I'll volunteer at the center or something. Now we have a center, you know. Well, that's good, right? But when there's something else that I'd rather do with my time, but I let go of that to be of service to someone else or something, you see, that hurts a little bit. We have to give something else. We have to let go a little bit. And that's really that's where the practice of non-self and of real generosity and giving gets interesting. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's got to be like that. And so we use these, you know, I mean, everybody goes, oh, yes, it's good to be generous, or it's good to be giving, and you know what I'm saying? But it's a deep practice. Because we can practice it very much like people do philanthropy and all that, you know, I mean, wealthy, you know, somebody gives 10 million and somebody gives 100 million, right? And everybody's floored, but the person has a billion. You know, I mean, it's nice what they're doing. I mean, I'm not diminishing the good action of that, but so what? You know what I mean? From a personal point of view, and Dharma is about the person, the individual, right? You know, so if a billionaire gave away a billion and kept 1 million for themselves and said, well, I can live quite well on a million. Mm-hmm. I'll give it all away. I'll do good with it. To me, that is something significant in that person. Right. So again, please see that giving of one's time, giving of one's energy. You know, traditionally in Zen, in a more monastic situation, a training situation, there's often, you know, doing work of service is considered part of the training, because we need to learn to to work mindfully. But the interesting thing is, if you ever go to a Zen temple and you spend some time there, is, here you are giving your energy, right, and your time. But they move you around, you see. Let's say you say, well, I'm a gardener, so I would love to, donate my time to work in the garden, right? But then they move you to clean the toilets. And maybe you're somebody who doesn't like cleaning toilets. Doesn't like cleaning up. So again, we want to be generous with our time, but only, and our energy, but only what? On my conditions, doing the things I like. So you see, there is still that attachment that's still holding on. It's not flowing. It doesn't say, it doesn't show up in life and go, I'm here. Tell me what needs to be done. How can I help? You see, that's generous, isn't it? Yeah, that's generous. It's good to practice the paramita of generosity, which is the practice of non-attachment, the practice of really seeing everybody else as an extension of oneself. In our tradition, we have something called second body practice, which means you are connected to another person, usually in the community, who becomes your second body. And your job with your second body is to be as concerned about them as you are your own body. You know how concerned we are about our own body, right? We check into with it all the day, and we clean it very assiduously, and we're always checking in on how it's feeling, and if it's not feeling well, we're always taking care about it. You know, we're always very attentive to our body and how it's doing. So having a second body means I am learning to be as concerned about another body as I am my own. It's a kind of way to take us out and begin to be able to be as concerned about the well-being and happiness of another human being as I am about my self. So I think generosity, again, not as an external practice where it's like a moral edict or something, but where it's coming from the inside, is where we see this world and the beings in it and the planet and the animals and the plants as all my second body. This is my body, you know, the body of all life. And that I am as concerned about it as myself. And again, I would say, I think the interesting thing, many of us feel like, ooh, letting go, giving up, painful. But the truth is, something fascinating happens, which is actually the more selfless we are in our giving of our energy, of our time, of our material resources, I think the truth is the happier we are. And we realize that living that life where everything is nickel and dimed, right, where everything is held on to, and is not a happy life. It's not a happy life. There's a lot of fear around that life. Because I am afraid that if I don't have this and I don't have that, I don't have this, if I don't have all this stuff, then somehow I am not going to be happy. Or if I'm not only, if I'm not in control of my time and where I do it, all that stuff, we think somehow that we will be less happy. But I think the truth is, my friends, that there is nothing that makes us happier than when we are helping another human being. I mean, those are meaningful experiences. And oftentimes, when we put aside our own agendas and all of a sudden just put it down and just open up to another human being, another situation, another need that's not our own, we feel lighter. It's kind of strange. It's actually often the opposite the way we think it's going to be. Again, that's because we're conditioned. Any questions about what I just said? I mean, how to do it, or whether it's worth doing, or anybody want to stand up for holding on for your dear life to everything you got? A lot of people are very afraid. They're very guarded about their energy. They parcel out their generosity, their openness, their giving to others, very like an eyedropper, afraid that somehow, it'll be too much for me. I'll have nothing left. Now, again, I'm not saying that, you know, getting a good night's sleep and taking care of one's basic needs isn't important. But I think if we look deeply, we see we may go overboard. And a lot of it, again, is self-indulgence. We think, if I set up my life always doing the things I want, somehow I will be happy. But that's a limited kind of happiness. There's a much deeper happiness that's available to all of us. And we often don't see that having a life like that, where everything is centered around me and my needs and what gives me happiness, and you know what I mean, is actually, it does not produce the happiness we think it does. Because why? Because we always have to keep doing it, right? Day after day, week after week, we're always just doing the same stuff. So obviously the kind of happiness it's bringing is not a very deep happiness, because it only lasts usually as long as the situation, you know, that we're indulging ourselves in. Does this sound kind of austere? It's really not. This is, and again, because you got to understand, from Buddhist point of view, this is not like imposing some kind of moral edict or Puritan kind of way, or, you know, you got to go out there and be selfless, and so, you know, it's not like that. I mean, that is very painful, and that creates a lot of guilt and shame, and it's not healthy. I'm saying something that comes from the inside, that blossoms from the inside, and that you will feel from the inside. So I guess I'm suggesting that generosity be something you experiment with. Angie and I were downtown the other night and passed by somebody, who's playing music. And anyhow, I like people like that. So we'll give him something. And I looked in my wallet, and I had a couple of singles, $2. And Angie saw me, and she said, "Why don't you give him the $5? You know what? She was absolutely right. I mean, it was just funny to see, you go to the $2, right? But there was a $5 there, and, you know, in the course of my life, that won't make a big difference. But it may make a difference to him, who's always getting singles. So it's sort of even as little as that. You know, where, I mean, I saw my own, I was like, it's interesting that in my generosity, the default is to go to the lower number. Right? I mean, it was just kind of, and there was just no reason for it. Because I was looking in the wallet, like, my money, rather than thinking, what would bring happiness to this person? It's a very different, you know what I mean? It's pernicious, this holding on that we do. We don't realize it. Yes, Brian.
You answered.
What the question was, how much to give to a...
how much you expect from this. It was along the lines of, you say not overextending. You said that you can't give too much energy or time, but I've experienced sometimes going a little too far and putting myself in a bad situation and still finding that balance, but I think you already commented on that.
Yeah, so the question was, Brian's saying, but at times I have overextended myself. But again, I don't think you've overextended the energy of generosity. You maybe have gotten yourself physically tired because you weren't taking care of yourself or something. So I'm saying, yeah, there has to be some common sense.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, obviously, if you have rent to pay and you have bills to pay, and you get your paycheck, you know, to give it all away, it may be a little unbalanced. Right? Then, you know, that you do need to take care of your needs, basic needs. Yeah. So again, there's got to be common sense, sanity in all of this. But again, practice should be experimental. That's what I'm saying. We should play with these things and not create them in absolutes. You know, generosity is a practice. And it's a wonderful practice because we are conditioned to holding on, to being attached, right? And we got all our stuff, we got all our money, we got all our material resources, we got all our time, we got all our, right? And then if there's any little outside that we don't need, maybe that we'll be generous with, right? That's the way we do it. But to begin to open up the whole thing, yeah, you know, that's interesting. Because we learn about ourselves, and we want to learn about ourselves. And I assure you, when you find the resistance, where you find yourself saying no, when you find yourself uncomfortable, that's the place to be experimental. Most of us, when we get to that place, we just pull back a little bit. Ooh, let me come back to where I'm comfortable. This is what I'm comfortable in giving. No, I want to know where you're uncomfortable in giving. That's the place. You know, I want to know what you're holding on to. You know, are you thinking of yourself or are you thinking of others? Because when you're thinking of others, you go, gee, maybe this is a beautiful whatever. Gee, I'd like lots of people to be able to enjoy it. Very different, eh? Most of us say, what? I want to keep it right in my home where I can enjoy it. Yeah. So it's a different way. It's like you're opening up. I mean, you know, we're all going to die anyhow, right? So at some point we're going to be separated from all our possessions. Yes.
So it seems like the opposite of the generosity is the greed.
Yeah, we could say that, yeah. The opposite, I'm just being trained up to speak for this. So the opposite of generosity is greed. We could say that.
I know that greed is talked a lot about in Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, is greed, it seems like greed is a seededness. Like all the other seeds. I mean, it's a very powerful seed that we have. And so through generosity, the opposite, do you think that slowly diminishes the greed in us? Or is that just part of... I mean, why is that? Why do we have this greed? Is it, you know, I think about that. Is it
right.
That's going... so we're successful? Or we're, you know, what is that?
Yeah, so that's a big, big deal, big question. But maybe I'll address it a little bit. So MT says, what about greed? I mean, it seems like the opposite of this generous, giving, non-attached is greed, which is, I want it. I gotta have it. I must have it, right? Greed. And say, well, what's, you know, where's that coming from? And so greed which is grasping, thirsting, needing, wanting, must have, whether it's for things or people or an experience. I mean, one can be greedy about anything, right? And one can be grasping and attached. And so it greed is a profound central experience of the world of self. You know, Buddhism is basically a psychology that says that which appears to be solid and real oneself, it is upon a deep investigation, one can clearly see that the self is really not a thing, an entity, which is very liberating. But because we live in the world of self, and again, it's because we from at very earliest time, this what basically is a basic kind of just feeling of self-preservation. There is a sense in the body of there's something here to preserve, right? But it's a very basic kind of, it keeps you when you're hungry eating, and when you're threatened, it keeps you, you know, it's a very primal kind of body, a self-preservation thing. But because the body is connected to the mind, and the mind, and because very early on in our childhood, we are told, we're given lots of messages about, now, were you called MT from earliest age? No, you were called?
Well, that was my nickname.
Okay, so very early on, you were told you're MT, right? And so, and that these toys are MT's toys, or MT is this. Or, so right away we start getting language that begins to say, you're a unique, special thing, right? You're MT, and you also learn the language of I, and, you know, I want this, and I need that, and I don't like this, and this is my toy, you can't have it, you know what I mean? We the self at a very rudimentary level, especially as it begins to develop thought, and begins to divide up the world, my, me versus you, my stuff versus your stuff, my needs, my wants, right? The little child comes into the world with, you know, 2-3 years old with lots of my's. It's called what? The terrible twos. See, somehow there was some wisdom back there. that developmentally what's going on, which is the individuation of the child moving from this extension of the parents in a very kind of open, spacious mind, as it begins to become more centered in a self, right? It begins to act out and say, what? No. No. I don't want to do that. I want to do that. I, right? And we call it the terrible twos. You see the wisdom. We understand there is something terrible going on here. And most parents go, what happened? This is my beautiful little child, you know, of 1 and 1.5 is becoming this terrible two, right? So it's interesting. There is a moment of clarity there. So what happens, of course, is that as we begin to grow and we have this stronger sense of I, me, mine in our head, we label everything, and have this sense of myself, that I'm a thing. But I'm really just a mental thing, but I think I'm really a thing. That mental capacity then begins to look at the world as something for it to attach to get things, or to push things away. I don't want that, I want that. I don't need this, I need that. Right? So over time, this self becomes to we could say, take over or claim our life. And as we go through now life with the world of things, the world of people, experiences, grades, achievements, not, you know, everything now becomes about what? Me. Right? And in its furthest extension, it becomes greed. I want that. Right? And that could be a person, That could be a goal, an objective, what, you know, it could be a thing, right? And the more we think that that will give us happiness, right? Because that's what happens. See, we think that if I get that, I will be happy. If I get that person, if I get that relationship, if I get that grade, if I get that car, if I get that, well, you know, whatever it is, right? If I get to go here, and if I get to stay overnight at my friend's house, and if I get to go to that party, and if I get to be popular, right? Then I'll be what? Happy. Right? So fueled by this insecurity, fueled by this wrong perception, the self enters the world of what's called attachment and aversion. And the expression of attachment is grasping. And grasping unleashed is greed. And so we are endlessly chasing after experiences, things, money, you know, rising up next, you know, whatever it is, new house, new job, new relationship, new hairstyle, new clothes, you know, gotta have. As if somehow when I get it, then I will be what? What?
All right.
Then I'll be happy. And the truth is what? I mean, in our moments of sanity, and we all have those moments of sanity, we know what? It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. How do I know it doesn't work? Because it's never enough. Right? Because the next day there'll be something else I'll need or want. It's endless. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. We can all figure that out. Maybe that's why we're here. We've all figured that out. Right? That way of living does not produce happiness. It may get us things. Right? And we can look around our homes and our houses and see we have lots of things. And we can remember that when we got them, they made us happy. For how long? And that began to diminish, and then we had to go find something else to go after. So Buddhist psychology goes about it at a 180. It says this whole way of living life does not produce happiness; it produces suffering, which is a radical way of looking at what we call ordinary human life, right? That we think will produce happiness, meaning, value. Buddhism says no, that produces unhappiness, that produces frustration, right? That when the mind is always grasping and is greedy and is wanting and needy, inner harmony, inner well-being, inner peace, lost, right? Lost.
Is there such thing as being greedy for peace?
Yeah. It is exactly right. Because is there something, can be one be greedy? Yeah, one can be greedy for good stuff. It's we're clinging, we're desperate. And people can approach Buddhism, meditation, spirituality with that same kind of grasping mind. And it just becomes another source of misery. Right? Because one finds what? It's not, you know, it doesn't change in a day. You know, it's not like going out for ice cream. Right? You go out for ice cream, right? You spend a couple of dollars and what? You get an immediate what?
Gratification.
What?
Gratification.
Immediate gratification. Happy. You know. When we wanted the ice cream, felt like we needed the ice cream, must have ice cream, we were a little uncomfortable. There's a little bit of things aren't right. But one knows what? When I have the ice cream, everything will be right. So there's a little anticipation there, right? And then we get the ice cream, and it's like nirvana. See, I'm not kidding. It's nirvana. It means what? Cessation of suffering. Right? So we have nirvana for how long?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. 10 minutes. So it's 10 minutes of nirvana. Again, nirvana means a cessation of suffering. So we have 10 minutes of nirvana. Right? I mean, we get a new car, and we may have nirvana for how long? Couple of days, or maybe a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months. I mean, you know, so there's, but again, it is a cessation of suffering that is temporary and will always lead to a sense afterwards of something's missing, something's, I'm feeling empty. I gotta go somewhere else. I gotta get something else. So again, as opposed to this way of living, the ego way of living, which always says happiness comes from getting, happiness comes from holding on and attaching, right? Buddhist psychology says, no, everything is fine already. You are just as you are, perfect. Everyone is inherently a Buddha. You might have heard that. And it's only our endless greed and striving and going after an unwillingness to cultivate our own capacity for inner peace, inner happiness, inner joy, inner stability, you know, all those things. You know, that's, you know, it's all right here. Because happiness is a quality of what? Of the mind. Peacefulness is a quality of what? The mind. I mean, we all know that, right? If you feel happy, if you feel at peace, if you feel relaxed, if you feel open and spacious, these are all qualities of what? Your mind. You can't buy it. A thing can't give it to you. Is that clear? And when you understand these are qualities of a mind, oh, now I get it. If I want happiness, you know, peace, joy, you know, well-being, comfort, openness, spaciousness of mind, I need to what? Cultivate my mind. Right? Oh. Oh, I can save a lot of money through this. Right? Oh, I can save a lot of money. Save a lot of work. Right? I mean, you know, everybody's working very hard. One job, two jobs, three jobs, getting more and more, right? Now, again, I know there are basic needs that we all have, but many people work far beyond what their needs because they think that if they get more, they'll be happy. But it doesn't work that way, does it? So we understand that if there are qualities of mind, qualities of being, qualities of relationship, right? Like, I'd like to have good relationships. I'd like to have good friendships. I'd like to, you know, all that stuff. Well, those aren't, right? Those aren't things you got to pay for. Those are things we just do. We need time for the meaningful things in life. The meaningful inner cultivation of the mind, the inner cultivation of the positive qualities in life, the meaning, you know, the meaningful, you know, I mean, what gives us happiness? I mean, now I'm talking about in terms of life. I mean, what gives us happiness? I mean, what are you happy doing? That's a question. Anybody want to just call out an answer? What makes you happy? What?
Being of service.
Being of service. So there. Doesn't cost you a dime. Anybody else find any other things in life that give them happiness?
Engaging in good relationships.
Being in good relationships. There you go. being of service to other people, helping people, being in a good relationship with another human being. Anything else give you happiness?
Enjoying nature,
right, there you go.
Being creative.
Yeah.
Spending time with friends,
yeah. Yeah, really, you know, relationship, goodness, yeah. Yeah.
Knowing you did well.
Whatever it is, feeling that you've haven't held back, that you've, you know, really given of yourself, yeah. Whatever it is, yeah, that feels good. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But just one second. I mean, are we clear? And if you're clear that happiness comes from all these very meaningful things, then please look at your life and notice how much time you spend devoting yourself to these things. You know, everybody says nature, right? And yet, they never even notice the sky all day. They're too busy. Right? We're too busy, aren't we, to notice the sky, to notice trees and flowers and people, right? We're with people maybe a lot during the day, and yet do we really connect with them? Because people say, yeah, I'd like to have meaningful, good relations with people. Well, in all our contacts with human beings during the day, are we clear that that's what we're doing? Or do we think we're doing a transaction? We're doing transactions. It's very different. No wonder we don't feel connected. No wonder we don't feel joy, because we're too busy. Our minds are too concerned about doing important things, right? And I'll give you another clue to the self. Whatever the self is doing is the most important thing in the world, right? Whatever you're doing is the most important thing. Everybody else, get out of my way. Because what? Clear the road, right? Because where I gotta go is the most important thing in the world. Right? Get everybody off the road. What are those people doing in my way? Slowing me down. Most important. I'm the most important person in the world, and what I got to do is the most important thing, right? Mm-mm-mm. My work, my job, my paperwork. Mm-mm-mm. Most important. That's another clue to the self. It takes itself very seriously. That's a clue. Gary.
The whole happy thing, I don't even get it.
What? The whole happy thing?
I don't quite even get it.
You don't even get
it? This happy to me just seems so, it comes and goes. I don't know. Some years ago, I don't know where, I just read, when the authors talk about the difference between happiness and gratification, and that really, really touched me, and for me, with myself, to first, the difference between happiness and gratification.
You're always happy what you're doing, but you don't always feel gratified?
When I do something that makes me feel gratified.
Yeah, how would you define the feeling of gratification? When you say I feel gratified as opposed to happy?
It runs deeper, mm-hmm. It seems more long-lasting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's had effort to do it, and I'm either child-rearing or some things on my job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really apply myself, and it's always fun or happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a deeper, and it's always been helpful for me to make that distinction. I can't say how it's been helpful, but I just feel and experience a substantial difference within myself. Is when I think about gratitude, it didn't always feel great.
Yeah, so that, I'm just repeating it. So that, I mean, that's an interesting point. And again, we have to be very careful with words. I mean, that's what you're saying. Yeah. So when Gary's talking about, he sees kind of happiness kind of on the level of fun, sort of superficial, or and as opposed to he's calling it something else, which he's calling gratification, which is which you can have in experiences. The sense of what you're calling gratification, what you're saying, may be involved in an experience that may not be happy or fun, but yet you feel it very meaningful. And I think again, we have to be very careful with words. So when Buddhism, in Buddhist psychology, talk about happiness, it's not happy-happy. It's not fun-fun-fun. It's not silly-silly, smile-smile. It's not that. Happiness is a deep sense of well-being. Yeah, so that's, yeah, so that's, I mean, you know, when you meet masters, they're not, you know, they're not happy-happy.
They're not giggly.
They're not giggly. They're very solid, they're peaceful, there's a sense of well-being and openness to them, which is a, really, so happiness. Yeah, happiness is not the, you know, it's again, it's like a lot of English words, you know, they're all translations. But in Buddhism, you know, which is a, which comes from Asia, where the language is different, you know, they're more like Sanskrit or where there are characters, there's more meaning wrapped up in each character than just a single word. So when we talk in Buddhism about happiness, you're really talking about the state of well-being, the state of an inner joy, which is a deeper thing. Now, I like the word gratification because, again, oftentimes gratification is more, in our language, often implies a kind of self-indulgence or something. Oh, that's, you know, sensually gratifying, like the you know. But I think when I just heard you say the word gratification, it reminded me of the word gratitude. And, you know, I think Thich Nhat Hanh said once, if we are not grateful, we suffer. And I think, from a Dharma point of view, I think to be in life wherever one is, I think a sense of appreciation and a sense of gratitude is the true experience. Because, you know, the self is never grateful, right? The self is always looking around to see what it's not getting, right? Or else, you know, it could have been more. Right? Could have been more, you know, there's always something lacking with the self. Right? So it's never really grateful. Grateful comes from something deeper. I think grateful comes from the experience of non-self, where it's like when you expect nothing, how can I put it? When you expect nothing, you're grateful for everything. Right? The self expects how people are going to treat it, how it's going to be treated, how things are going to unfold for it. How are things going to unfold? Always the way it wants. Right? That's how the self wants. But when there's no agenda, right? Then you're grateful for everything. Right? You're grateful for the beautiful day. You're grateful for people in your life. You're grateful to be alive. Right? Because you understand nothing is known. And all expectations are false. So, I think a deep to go through life with a deep sense of gratitude. Even as you said, even at times when things are difficult, you know that in this moment, you are grateful for the opportunity to experience, to grow, to open, to let go. And that's wonderful to know that we have that opportunity, even in a difficult situation. And, you know, if you're expecting every day to be beautiful, then you're not grateful. But if you have no expectations, then every day is a beautiful day. If you're not expecting the world to treat you with reverence, then when the world treats you nice, you're grateful. When people are kind to you, you're grateful. When people are loving to you, you're grateful. When people want to help you, you're grateful. But that's, we're grateful because we have no agenda. So I think, again, I think I would use gratitude more than gratification, but I, right. But it's the same, yeah. So, yeah. We're talking about experiences that are deeper than the superficial. Yeah, and that's, I think that's why we're here. Right? That's why we're here. So I think it's just about time to end. So any questions before we end? We have just a couple of minutes. I said I'd leave time for questions at the end. Any questions about what was talked about, not understood, not clear, how to practice? Maybe everybody's just hungry and wants to get on to lunch. So we'll stop here.